Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Big Shorts show because Rick and I are wearing our big shorts.
Is that a fat joke? Are you going to start this off this way?
We are celebrating The Big Short, Inside the Doomsday Machine, a nonfiction book by Michael Lewis, released in 2010, bestseller on the New York Times list, and made into a film released December. And I thought it was one whale of a movie. It is the kind of movie that educates you while entertaining you, a very thing to which we aspire. We decided to call it The Big Short Show, and that's it, Rick. There is no hidden agenda here. No one is saying anything about anyone else except Rick and I are, in the middle of winter, wearing our big shorts to celebrate.
Believe me, here in Kentucky right now, it is not shorts weather. It is anything but shorts weather. January is going to come in fierce like a lion.
I think that's March that comes in. You know, March goes online and goes on the land.
It's my story. I'll tell it.
Okay.
Okay? You be the host. I'll be the color guy.
Sure.
And that was colorful.
That was colorful. As are your shorts. You know, speaking of color, from the University of Kentucky, Manager of Communications Infrastructure, and a man with colorful shorts to tell you about our web presence, Rick Phillips. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Tony. You know you can get the audio of the show at WMKY.org. That's right. Moorhead State Public Radio's website, WMKY.org. That's where we store all the wonderful hours of our audio. Just find your way through the menus there. You'll find Health Matters. Certainly, go there. Look at the most recent shows are there. We put a little summary there for you in case there's something specific you're looking for. Don't go solely by the summary. A lot of times the summary represents 1 3-minute segment of the show, and believe me, those shows are just cram-packed with good stuff. So they're there. They're at, again, WMKY.org. After that, you've developed a liking. You want to interact. You have questions. We have answers. You get those questions answered at facebook.com/HMRadioshow. That's right. It's a fan page. You can go, anybody can build a fan page. They even let Health Matters. We ask you to go out there and like it. It's your way to communicate with us. Send us show topics. Send us questions, things you're interested in, things you liked about the show, things you might not have enjoyed about the show. Sometimes we post to colorful pictures, certainly not of shorts this week, but you just never know what's going to find its way onto our Facebook page. And again, that Facebook page is facebook.com/HMRadioshow.
Our sponsor for today's show, Breast Cancer Guidelines. That's right, making the news once again. Breast Cancer Guidelines. No, there are not new guidelines. We are not talking about new guidelines, but we are talking about the way we have interpreted older guidelines. This is from November 2009. Do you remember back in that fateful year, November 2009, Rick?
I do.
Yeah.
It was the year I bought a new car.
Was that the last year you bought a new car?
Yeah.
Okay.
My car's currently 7 years old, or will be this year.
Well, also 7 years old are these U.S. Preventative Services Task Force, that is the government body composed of independent clinicians and scientists who make recommendations regarding screening tests.
So what if I told you we were already doing Health Matters for greater than 6 years?
Back in 2009. Still didn't know what we were doing. Still don't know what we were doing.
Color guy does, right there.
Historical perspective, that's why we have our color guy. All right, these guidelines are for women with no symptoms, ages 40 years or older, no pre-existing breast cancer, no high-risk breast lesions, not at high risk because of family history, not at high risk because of a genetic mutation like the BRCA gene, no history of radiation to their chest at a young age. These are for average-risk women ages 40 years or older. First of all, their recommendation is between ages 50 and 74 years, the Preventive Services Task Force recommends screening mammograms every 2 years. Say it again. Between ages 50 and 74, screening mammograms every 2 years. Grade A recommendation, meaning they're fairly certain that there's a good benefit and they think there may be a substantial benefit. Ages 40 to 49, the decision to start in people who are not at high risk, the decision to start before age 50 should be individual. For people who place a high value on benefit and don't worry so much about the harms of mammography, they may choose to begin every 2 years at age 40. Up to age 49. 59. For average risk, most of the benefits going to result in 50 to 74, and in fact, ages 60 to 69 are the most likely to avoid a death due to breast cancer by screening. But mammography can be used age 40 to 49. They call that a grade C recommendation, probably a small benefit, there is risk. The risk, false positive results. You're told you have breast cancer when you really don't. Biopsies, because you have a place that looks a little funny and they do unnecessary biopsies. You may, in fact, even be treated for something that would turn out not to be a risky cancer. All those risks are higher if you begin in your 40s. Those with women with a parent, sibling, or a child with breast cancer are at a higher risk, and they may also benefit more from beginning at age 40. But the fundamental, the key recommendation of the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force in November 2009, unchanged since then, is breast mammography every 2 years for average risk women between ages 50 and 74. We'll talk more in our second fractional portion about why that is important, why we are bringing it up now, but that's our sponsor, Breast Cancer Screening Guidelines. Rick, how about those hoverboards?
They're on fire.
Can you imagine a more disastrous toy?
Oh, yes. Well, but the thing is they're so cool. Everybody wants one, but everybody knows they can't get one.
Right. You can't ride on them. I mean, you will fall off them. You will hurt yourself.
You're either going to fall and break a leg or burn your house down.
Or they blow up. I mean, those are your three options with hoverboards.
There is a fourth one. It does normal.
You look cool.
Yeah, you look cool.
Option one, you look cool. How often does that happen?
Well, hey, for guys, that's a risk we're willing to take.
What would have to be the percent of times that you would look cool?
Anything greater than zero.
Great. So you get a 2% shot of looking cool. Meanwhile, the thing blows up, catches fire, and you fall off of it and break
your
arm.
And you know good and well you'd take that chance.
Well, you know,
tell me right now, straight up, do you want to ride one?
No. Oh, my gosh,
you don't even
want
to try?
No.
You're not even intrigued to see
now,
if you're at your age, can you keep your balance?
I grew up on a farm, and unless the pond froze over, we did not have a flat surface anywhere. So I did not learn how to roller skate. I did not learn how to ice skate. I did not use skateboards. I did none of those things. You are an expert skater.
Well, I wouldn't.
You skated throughout.
When
school.
I was younger, I was a very good roller skater. Let's
yes.
put it that way.
And so you are comfortable with gliding. The only time I glide...
Well, at my size now, I don't glide. I move in a direction.
It's just, and the thing is, this happens
so
fast.
But you're really serious. You don't want to try a Segway or a hoverboard or...
You know, I think a Segway where I'm holding, I have nothing...
Well, the Segways that are coming out now, I just came back from CES. So yeah. I did attend CES, and the Segways that they're coming out with now have no handles. Now, they're not a hoverboard in that they're totally flat, and they don't have 3-inch wheels. They have nice big 10 and 12-inch wheels. But they have done away with the bar. There's a bar that comes up about a foot, and it kind of goes between your legs. So your legs can kind of...
This sounds like a horrible idea.
Well, I mean, but it's
but
just so you can...
Up.
Well, it's only a foot high, too. So unless you're just really short, it doesn't pose a danger to you.
I can fall in a creative way, Rick.
Yeah, okay.
Consumer Electronics Show. You went to Las Vegas.
170,000 of my closest friends. You know, 16 different exhibit halls. 70,000 booths. Or vendor, you know, different. Well, there weren't necessarily vendors, but there were booths. It was a lot of steps on my Fitbit.
Yeah, I bet so. And so you saw these things. You
absolutely.
Saw that Segway.
I saw the one man, the one. Now, Tony, I saw a drone, not just your average drone, not just one for delivering, you know, 5 pounds of groceries. It would haul a 220-pound human. Now, luckily, I kind of am above that weight category. So,
or you would have bought it?
No, I wouldn't have bought it. No. It was a drone that flew a person from point A to point B.
Right.
The person was not the pilot. Oh, you see the light come on in this show host's head. This drone, you could either program in coordinates and it would go from A to B, or somebody else could fly it under a license kind of thing.
Right. So I go to the parking garage. I strap on the drone, and I hop. I drone hop. Oh, instead of riding the shuttle bus, I drone hop over to the
exactly.
Building.
But I'm telling you, and I don't know any other way to explain this, but I'm going to tell a little story. We've all heard the story about breakfast, right? You have bacon and eggs, right? The chicken is involved. The pig is committed, right?
Right.
I want my pilot in an airplane committed.
Right. And this is one of the problems with those pilotless airplanes. Is
exactly.
You feel
they
like
just
whoever's
chalk
running
up
the thing needs to have some stake in the game.
I just become a notch on the wall going, oops.
Right. a statistic.
Yeah, I am a statistic at that point, as to where if they are in the left seat flying the plane, they have a self-vested interest in successful landings.
Gotcha.
So anyway, I don't think that one's going to go over too well.
But still, I mean, you can see there certainly we are poised on a revolution of personal transportation devices, whether it's ground or whether it's air.
Well, there were 12 completely autonomous cars. You did not have to drive them in any way, shape, or form. They drove everywhere. Point of record, the Google cars that have racked up millions of miles of testing in autonomous, the only accidents they've ever been in, other people hit them. So our only hope is that we all get autonomous cars, because the guy that chooses not to is still going to hit us.
Yeah, I guess so. But there's an element of road rage. If I see one, I'm going after it.
Well, you can't get road raged if you're asleep.
Well, let's just see how this Google car holds up if somebody cuts it off. Let's just see how close I can tailgate one of these
if
cars.
If I'm asleep,
let me just
I don't
test
care.
This thing out. Yeah, well, I'm going to be all over your car while you're sleeping in the back seat. I'm going to be running circles around it just to see how it responds.
So tell me when you want to hear more, because I have more CES. I have the refrigerator section. I have the wearable section. I have the 3D printing section.
All right. I tell you what, Rick's obviously has hijacked the agenda. Let me just do one thing.
Hey, it's my big short.
That's right. You've got the show's trademark. But let me just say, on this hoverboard, this was an incredibly rapidly marketed
toy. By the way,
toy.
Hoverboards were not allowed at CES.
They're not allowed on UK's campus?
Well, no,
Murray's
you couldn't
campus?
Use them at the vendors had to keep them within their booth. You could not ride a Segway or a hoverboard around the convention.
Right. This is so bad. First of all, it's happening very rapidly. The injuries are piling up. The Consumer Product Safety Commission has a couple of dozen injuries reported to them, but there's one hospital in the Houston area treated 14 injuries between Christmas and New Year's Eve. The first week people had hoverboards, they had 14 emergency room injuries. Meanwhile, the Consumer Product Safety Commission does recommend that you not charge it up if you're going to give it to somebody, because if you charge it all the way and you wrap it, it might actually blow up. The National Association of State Fire Marshals says do not operate a cell phone while doing it. That makes a lot of sense. They also mentioned never leave one unattended while it's charging to lower the risk of an explosion. And I'm going, well, frankly, an explosion is a very good reason for me to leave it unattended.
Exactly.
I don't particularly want to attend to an explosion. But these things, let me just say to our Health Matters radio fans, these are just a bad idea. You need the standard safety gear. You need helmets. You need pads. You need those things for these things. But the other thing is, any device that seems to catch fire or blow up when you try to charge it is just not ready for prime time. We recommend strongly you not partake of this. Don't get on these things. Don't buy these things. Don't do anything with these hoverboards.
They're not a good Christmas gift.
They are way too dangerous. If you unfortunately got one for Christmas, please, please put it on a shelf, or better yet, put it out in the backyard where if it blows up.
Take it back while you still can.
Yeah. Yeah. Why don't you do that during the break? You're listening to Health Matters. Stay tuned for our second fractional portion.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Big Shorts show. Our salute to the Big Short, the movie.
Why are you looking at me when you say that?
Because those shorts are sort of eye-catching. I'll put it that way. Our sponsor for the second time.
I use them as a sail on my boat.
Breast Cancer Screening Guidelines. U.S. Preventive Services Task Force released these guidelines November 2009. And let's just cut to the chase. For women at average risk, you don't have a genetic mutation. You don't have a family member with known breast cancer. You yourself have never been diagnosed with breast cancer or high-risk precancerous lesion. You did not have chest radiation at a young age. If you are average risk, they recommend that you get screening mammograms every 2 years between ages 50 and 74. That's it. Age 40 to 49, you can get it every 2 years if you are very concerned about cancer and you're willing to tolerate a high risk of false positives, a high risk of unnecessary biopsies, a possibility of receiving chemotherapy for something that would actually not wind up metastasizing and affecting your health. The problem is, and realistically, there are cancers breast cancers that affect women in their 40s that are life-threatening cancers. These cancers spread. We all have friends, acquaintances, have people we know that have contracted and died of breast cancer, I guess have developed and died of breast cancer in their 40s. The problem is not that it doesn't exist. The problem is that the screening tests we have now are very clunky. When you look at this thing, it's absurd on the face of it. For instance, right now, we talked about how bad the winter was. How would you approach that, Rick, if you wanted to know whether or not the weather was changing?
I look out the window.
Right. And then you look out again and again and again and again. And that's right. What we do with mammograms. Well, why not just check your weather app and see what the forecast is?
Because it's wrong 80% of the time.
You're not helping me with my point, Rick.
No, but I'm being very... Remember, we're getting ready to deal... In a couple of days, we're getting ready to deal with Snowmageddon.
Yeah. My point is that we are developing the basis to understand the genetic changes that predispose people to developing cancer. And the idea of taking a photograph every year, again and again and again, and studying that photograph for smudges or things that might be cancer and biopsying them it's on its way to being outdated. And hopefully...
No, I hear you, and I'm just making fun of it.
These recommendations are a recognition that the old idea of looking and looking and looking again is not a good way to screen for cancer. We need to get a little bit further upstream and understand the changes that predispose to cancer. Now, the reason I mention this, the reason I'm putting these guidelines on is, one, to make our Health Matters Radio fans aware of them, but secondly, this was January 18th in the AMA Journal. It was a viewpoint published by a group out of Georgetown University, their Institute for National and Global Health Law. And they pointed out, back in 2009, the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force updated its breast cancer screening guidelines, again, with recommendations every 2 years for average-risk women between ages 50 and 74. Instead of relying on those guidelines, Congress amended the Affordable Care Act, mandating the Department of Health and Human Services go back to the 2002 guidelines, which recommended screening every 1 to 2 years, starting at age 40. Last year, the Preventive Services Task Force, again, now we're back to 2015. Again, they provisionally recommended every 2 years starting at age 50. On December 18th, 2015, Congress again required the Department of Health and Human Services use the 2002 guidelines. A political body required the Department of Health and Human Services to use outdated scientific evidence.
Ooh.
The politics of breast cancer screening. First of all, there's groups that benefit from it. Secondly, there are women whose lives are at risk from it. And the emotion triumphs the science. Trumps the science in this. The science says, according to the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, the science says screening is not that good. But the emotion takes effect, and politicians are requiring now, as of 2015, that we skip the modern recommendations and go back to the 2002 recommendations.
Oh, my goodness.
Yep, 14-year-old guidance. That's what's driving the Department of Health and Human Services. Here are the numbers. Again, this is from the AMA Journal editorial. In the case of mammography, one in every 3,400 women in their 40s screened will avoid a cancer death compared to those not screened. One in 3,400. Now, the insurers and politicians can weigh this. They can decide what they want to do. In the opinion of the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, we could use that money better elsewhere. Now, that's the thing. You say, well, sure, I would save one in 3,400 women. But the problem is we are committing people to die of other things by spending that money on mammograms that could be spent on other aspects of health. So it's not like it's you can spend infinite amounts of money. We know that now. We need to use our money wisely, and we could save more lives if we put that money elsewhere, but that is a political decision. That is a decision that politicians are not willing to make. That's why we bring up the breast cancer guidelines. We want you to be aware of the science. We also want you to be aware of the emotions and the political response to that science. And it's just it's unfortunate when a government body overrides its own advisory board and commits us to following outdated information. Now, again, I understand the emotions, but I will counter that if we spend that much money screening that many women, we are condemning other segments of society to die unnecessarily because we can't afford their treatments. And that might be the people with hepatitis. It could be people with lung disease. It could be any other disease where we're robbing the money from that disease to pay for these screening mammograms. Sorry, people will die. We have the ability to choose to some degree who and how.
Right.
And we are not making that based on the best science.
Yeah, it's hard to even fathom how stuff like this happens. I don't know, Tony. The political machine It's a beast sometimes, right?
Well, I remember when those guidelines came out, there was a bill introduced to cut funding from the Preventive Services Task Force, the one advisory body we've got. They are not they're not Republican, they're not Democratic, they're a group of doctors. They try to include generalists and avoid the so-called experts in the field because the experts in the field have a vested financial interest in the outcomes.
Right.
The Affordable Care Act put a lot of pressure on these decisions because now if the Preventive Services Task Force says it's a good idea, it is, as a screening measure, it's paid for free. It's paid. It's absolutely 100% paid for by insurance policies. So there is a lot of money riding on getting that A or B recommendation from the Preventive Services Task Force. And unfortunately, that's created then the potential for scuttling these things politically.
Amazing.
Next up, January 19th, the CDC released its recommendations regarding travel for pregnant women to Central and South America. This is about the Zika virus, Z-I-K-A virus. You should know about this because it represents a disturbing trend, something we're going to all have to watch out for. You know, Rick, we at Health Matters have been concerned about the chikungunya virus.
Right.
Because you like the name.
Right.
And
I don't. You do. You like that name. You like saying it.
It's the name of the virus. I don't have any choice. What would I can mumble it. I can censor myself, or I can say chikungunya.
Or you could say turkey gunya.
You like the name. You secretly like the name. You've always liked that name.
I like chicken.
And when you think chikungunya, it sounds like it should be in
a recipe.
Bowl.
It's a recipe.
Yeah, you should. You bring a spoon.
Right. It's spicy. It's Cajun.
It is, in fact, African in nature, and it is a. It's a virus. That's,
nobody ever said that I was, you know, all knowing here. You know, I mean, you point that out regularly.
And I got to say, in those shorts, you look ridiculous.
Yeah,
you know?
Right. Huh. You're the one who named the show after me.
Which I'm very much regretting. Back to the Zika virus. So the Caribbean area has a mosquito-borne disease called the chikungunya virus. Infected, I think we were up over 1 million people around the Caribbean. And travelers of the Caribbean could pick this up from the mosquitoes. It was transmitted by some mosquitoes, apparently, in Florida. And it will probably come to the coastal United States. And this is a very annoying virus. It creates, it's very painful. It creates muscle aches and arthritis. And that can last for quite some time. It's not like influenza where it goes away in a few days. Well, the Zika virus is transmitted by the same mosquito. This is something called the Aedes aegypti mosquitoes. They are a cesspool type mosquito. They transfer dengue, they transfer chikungunya, and now they transfer Zika. All these new viruses hit Central and South America around 2014. Some people think the World Cup brought them when it was in Brazil. Unknown, but at any rate, they are there now. The countries, Brazil, Colombia, El Salvador, French Guiana, Guatemala, Haiti, Honduras, Martinique, Mexico, Panama, Paraguay, Suriname, Venezuela, and Puerto Rico. All of these countries, they have recommended that pregnant women not travel to these countries. The reason is this Zika virus is associated with some pretty severe birth defects. Link it to something called microcephaly, which is an abnormally small head, and also with brain damage. If you have been to the Caribbean and you have a sudden onset of a fever with a skin rash, muscle aches, and a watery eyes and eye irritation within 2 weeks of getting back, you may have had the Zika virus. Again, these countries that I mentioned, that's where it's been confirmed. There is a in Brazil, they've had over 3,000 babies born with small heads and brain damage, as many as 1.5 million people infected. No cure for this, no vaccine for this. So if you are pregnant, it is not a good time for a Caribbean vacation. If you are going to the Caribbean or to Central or South America, make sure you take steps to avoid mosquitoes because things are not as safe, I guess, as they used to be. Be aware of the chikungunya virus, the Zika virus. These new mosquito-borne viruses have been transmitted now into Central and South America. These are new to our area, and they have potential for serious damage. All right, so now we've gotten the heavy stuff, birth defects due to a virus we have no treatment for right now. The guidelines are kind of sad, Rick. You just basically you monitor the child with a or the baby with a ultrasounds and watch to see if the head grows normally. That's about all we've got, and that doesn't sound like much of a treatment at all. So I'm looking for something happy. I'm looking for a guy who's been to Las Vegas and comes back with an overview of state-of-the-art technology. So I promise Rick, I give him the rest of this segment to talk about the things he saw in Vegas.
Yeah, and you went on and on for like, you know, a bunch of, you know, you,
a bunch
just,
of minutes.
Yeah, you
yeah.
just you're just monopolizing this show once again.
Use your time.
The guy
you
with
to.
The big shorts
whine,
gets to
you
talk.
Gripe, that's fine.
The guy with the big shorts gets to talk.
I'm shutting up.
Okay, so one of these years, you're going to have to go with me so that you can tell our listening audience that I'm not lying.
Okay. So you're talking about things so fantastic.
Well, I mean, this year, I don't think this year was what I would call the so fantastic year. I mean, I don't think anything that was earth-shattering. Yes, last year, 2 years ago, we were doing high-def TV. Now, then along comes ultra-def or 4K TV. And guess what? They never do things that aren't multiples. So now this year, guess what? If you were going to guess, what's the new resolution that came out this year?
Platinum def.
The first one was 2K.
Okay.
The second one was 4K.
We're going to 8K.
Exactly. It's so difficult to figure that one out. So is that revolutionary? I don't know. Does this mean we're going to have to start buying all kinds of different Blu-rays? I don't know. But I do know that you're starting to see some of the 4K recorded material come out. So you'll be able to watch movies in almost the same quality you would see at your movie theater. You know, now, so if you have a, 37-foot TV at home, you're going to get to see it in all its splendor soon.
37-foot.
Well, I'm just saying, if you go to the movie theater, those things are huge. Yeah. I mean, I was making a number up. I was kind of guessing. That looks like about 40 feet. I don't know what it is. But they show those in ultra-high def. Those are they're designed so that, when you're 2 inches away, you don't see the individual little pixels, right?
Right.
So 8K TVs. There was a TV that has been made all over the news that it rolls up like a newspaper.
Yep, seen that.
Well, you've seen it because you watched a video. It was actually nowhere to be found at CES. I looked everywhere for that TV, and this person said, oh, it's over there, and that person said, oh, it's over there, till I finally got one nice lady to confess and say, I don't think it's here. I think it's just a marketing video you watched or you read about. So, yes, they're coming. Yes, they can roll them up. And so why would you roll up your TV, Tony? What's the advantage of being able to roll up your TV?
You could steal it.
Does make it easy on the thief.
Yeah. I mean, other than that, I seldom take a TV from one room to another anymore.
But now you can.
I know, but why? I mean,
do you want to buy two 70-inch TVs, or would you just roll one up and take it with you?
I walk and sit in a chair. I'm okay with that. I'm okay with one TV.
Well, again, I get it. So you're going over to your friend's house. They have a 50, and you have a 70. You're going to unroll your 70.
Oh, you're going to be one of those guys.
Exactly.
Excuse me. I brought my own TV.
Gosh, what a techno jerk.
What if you took it on vacation with you? Have you ever wanted to set up a bigger TV while you're on vacation and watch a movie?
No.
Yeah,
absolutely not.
You and I do vacations. Right. You and I do vacations different. Yeah, I'm not that guy, but I know people who are.
Yeah,
they should go. This hotel has a really scummy TV. I need a bigger TV. Fortunately, I got one in my suitcase.
Vacation is about not working. It's not about enjoying where you go. I mean, it's about relaxing. Okay. So I get it. So there's these huge 8K TVs. There's ones that roll up. Great. The TV market, we all kind of expected. I don't think there's anything groundbreaking there. You want to hear some health information? There were a ton of wearables, ton of biometrics, a ton of things that both watches, Fitbits, you name it, measuring everything from heart rate to UV exposure to steps to vertical steps to, sleeping patterns. I mean, just you name it, it's there. You can wear it. And the thing is it's went from being a novelty black band to a decorative piece of jewelry again. We've actually, in our lifetime, we've seen watches be, mainstream, go out of mainstream, go completely off people's wrist. Now they're coming not only back on the wrist, they're turning into decorative pieces of jewelry again. So you're going to see a lot of people wearing what looks like a silver or a gold or a silver watch. And when you dig down into it, the screen is actually going to be a digital display running a smartwatch or a smartphone based in the watch. Everything's Wi-Fi. You see Bluetooth's kind of slowly moving away. There's a lot of this stuff is Wi-Fi based. So the wearables were kind of cool. The real thing for me from a biometric standpoint was Intel, the big chip company, they make all the computer chips, right? They have come up with a computer chip that can actually sense your adrenaline levels. Right. So it knows when your adrenaline level changes, increases. And they had a demonstration of a lady wearing a dress that had a mechanical set of what looked to be the skeleton of a set of wings, right, on her back. And she could literally increase her adrenaline levels by breathing hard or taking in a deep breath. And she could literally make those wings expand and contract. And so the wings would get big and get small, get big. And, they would basically grow and shrink based on her adrenaline levels. Is that important to you?
So you had this Victoria's Secret model that's got
a she wasn't that. She was a young lady, but she was not.
A woman with wings on her back is a Victoria's Secret model.
She was not wearing lingerie. She was wearing a dress. It was
what are we talking about this for?
It was a full figure. You can probably look it up on YouTube, or but it was a full dress. And just do a search for Intel and adrenaline. But here's the thing, Tony. This dress was designed to get people's attention. But there was a gentleman in the background giving demonstration, talking about what was going on, what we were looking at. And really, the intent is, if we can sense your adrenaline level in that. Basically, you can sense the fight or flight feeling that you get. What if a soldier was wearing a carbon fiber, uniform that you could apply a current to it and cause it to get stronger or harder, possibly bulletproof? So when the adrenaline ramps up, the suit actually hardens up to protect the soldier. So these are the things that they were talking about that you could do with biometrics. Right. You could actually make the outerwear behave faster than you can tell it to do it.
As soon as you sense danger, something would happen. A lid would slam.
We eliminate the male stupidity gene.
I can handle this myself.
Exactly. So there's a lot of cool things that they can do with these biometrics and these sensing technologies, and this is only the beginning. I mean, Samsung had an entire clothing line for men. They had sensors on your belt. They had sensors on your wallet. They had sensors on all your shirts and pants, and they would give you various things, tell you, how much you've walked, how much you've been active. Your wallet tells you when you need to go to the bank. It literally keeps track of all your stuff, all kinds of things. Belt loops, there's tons and tons of biometrics coming. And so I think everybody needs to be prepared that they're going to wash their pants someday and ruin the biometrics.
Yeah, good point. And with the adrenaline, again, if you know it, then you can modify it. You can calm yourself down. You can realize when you're getting steamed. You'll have alarm bells maybe before you go off and do something that you would regret. So,
exactly.
Again, it is a nice counter to stupidity. Your counter to stupidity is to take a break. We're going to come back with our third and final fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Big Shorts Rick.
that's probably not going to stick, but I love that name. I'm Big Shorts Tony.
Hey, wait a minute.
Well, you could do it. You remember Bugs Bunny had Big Shorty and Short Biggie?
Right.
So I guess I'm Short Biggie Tony. I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. Big Shorts. That didn't work at all, did it? That silence.
Now, see, you need to quit. You need to quit the color and stick to the hosting.
Yeah, I got
to
go by play by play. I got to be the serious guy. I'll let you do the jokes. That's fine. Our sponsor for today's show: Breast Cancer Guidelines. Again, the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force for Women of Average Risk. You do not have a history of breast cancer or a history of precancerous lesions. No one in your family had breast cancer. You do not have a genetic mutation. You did not get chest radiation. For an average risk woman, the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force recommends starting age 50 every 2 years, screening mammograms between ages 50 and 74 years. Between 40 and 49, that is an individual decision. You have to decide how much priority you place on the benefits of the 1 in 3,400 people being saved versus the harms of misdiagnosis, possibly unnecessary chemotherapy and biopsies that might occur to some of the others. And that would probably, again, be a handful out of the 3,400. Most people just go and get mammograms and grumble about it and don't have any particular gain or harm from it. After age 75 years, according to the Preventive Services Task Force, not enough evidence to tell whether mammography helps. That doesn't mean that it doesn't help, just means we do not have enough evidence. For women with dense breasts, ultrasounds, magnetic resonance imaging, MRIs, or other methods have not enough evidence to recommend them, according to the Preventive Services Task Force. So that is our sponsor. And again, from the second fractional portion, I will remind you, the U.S. government has chose to ignore these guidelines and has mandated that we follow the 2002 guidelines, which, in fact, the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force has mothballed. They no longer believe those guidelines, and yet they are still being followed. And, they're one of the outcomes of the recent Canadian elections. The Canadian government was actually muzzling its scientists. You could not speak to a federally sponsored scientist unless you went through a communications network. You were not allowed just simply to go talk to somebody about their scientific research. So, in effect, the government controlled the public communication of
government scientists. In the same way, here are scientists. The U.S. government is paying them to create expert recommendations. We're basing our insurance on their recommendations, except when we decide not to, in which case we choose to ignore them. That's what we're doing. That's our sponsor, Breast Cancer Screening Guidelines. One final note I wanted to mention about Rick, the adrenaline-sensitive monitor,
right,
where the wings came out of the woman. I don't understand that, but I'll take your word for it.
You can Google it.
Yeah.
You'll get away with it this time.
Okay. Can I do that at work? It doesn't sound like something.
Well, if you Google at work, you got problems.
So at any rate, I wanted to point out one of the first things that happens in a person with diabetes when their sugar goes low is that those adrenaline levels surge. We know that. It's your body's first response to a low sugar before you even are aware of it. So that adrenaline surge would be a vital thing for a person with diabetes. Maybe you won't get wings on your back, but at least you'll be aware that your sugar's going low and you'll be aware in time to do something about it. So again, I can see an immediate use for this, immediate health use, building this indoor clothing.
I wish you wouldn't have said anything. We could have went in business and been out of this business.
Yeah, we could have actually made some real money, huh?
Yeah, we could have. I mean, Intel is there not to promote products, okay? So Intel doesn't go out with the intent to sell a consumer electronics. What they do is they provide the electronics vendors with technology to build better products.
They provide capabilities.
Correct.
Not
right.
Merchandise.
Right. They're not a merchandise company. They sell products. They sell cape technologies. And this adrenaline technology, I found it to be, you know, with a health, little bit of a healthcare background, I mean, and, you know, what we do, I mean, this will open the door to other chemicals, to other, you know, ways our body work and being able to sense and help. To me, it was just a phenomenal, you know, display. Now, granted, a lot of people were impressed with the cars. A lot of people were impressed with the drones. There was a ton of drones. There was a ton of 3D printing. I saw a 3D printer, no kidding, was the size of a wall, you know, a room wall, but it would print, you know, things bigger than a bowling ball. I mean, it would literally print two things that were 2 foot by 2 foot made out of titanium. I mean, it would print in metal. So, I mean, if you think about it, you could no longer have to form these parts or go through these machining processes. This thing would print something with a higher tensile strength than what you could do through traditional methods. Now, I don't know. It's going to be cool watching 3D printing. But when you get past all that, I think the last real technology that I found to be interesting, and I wish Gene Jones was here because this would be a great conversation to have with her. Samsung had a display where they put out all their smart kitchen items. So the kitchen had the pantry and the refrigerator. They all had cameras in the storage areas, right? So these cameras would, using either, I guess, night vision because it was dark inside the cabinet, and they would identify the components or the items that were in your cupboard, in your pantry. And then the smart system would look at your ingredients that you had available to you and then offer you recipes based on what you had in the house.
If I have a Slim Jim.
Now, college kids, I am so sorry. They're going to probably not have a recipe for you that has ramen noodles and a Slim Jim.
Just saying. You get, I have heard, though, in all seriousness, I did hear, and I suppose it came out of this, that you could take a picture of a dish and this thing would analyze the caloric value, nutritional value.
Well, it did provide you the recipe, and the recipe did have caloric value and all that, but I think that's all based off the recipe. I don't know that it was based off of the picture of what was on the contents. And it was fairly limited. I mean, right now, you only could have, you were limited to 10 things in your pantry. So you had to have a fairly small drawer.
You know, I guess at these shows, then, you see stuff that excites you about what it could be.
Exactly.
Because let's face it, this is a show. This stuff, some of it is obviously already being sold. Some of it is ramped up to be sold. But some of it is something that I assume you're looking 5 years ahead. And
exactly.
You want to kind of gauge the enthusiasm for this product. So
but think about that, Tony. If you can identify Stokely's green beans just by looking at the can, and then, okay, so today I can do that for 10 things in the cupboard, and I bump it against a list of a million things. Tomorrow I'll be able to do 50 things in the cupboard and I'll be able to bump it against 2 billion things. So yeah, it is about tomorrow. It's about what if we can do it for 1 or 5 or 10, then tomorrow we'll be able to do it for 5 million, 2 billion, you know, 3
See,
trillion.
If I'm a grocery store, I would sponsor that and I would say, did you know that you are one can of anchovies away from an excellent seafood meal? You know, and so
I don't think it would ever say that in my house. The cool, I mean, the kitchen technology was cool. The refrigerators were getting smart. They had, you know, they had 32-inch kind of vertical screens mounted in there, so they would literally offer you recipes. They would tell you when you were low on product in the refrigerator. They would, you know, you could put up the weather channel or TV channel. Or I mean, they were very interactive, very, very smart refrigerators, I think they're calling them. Lots of cool things. Mine did get jogged on one little thing. One other cool thing that means absolutely nothing to the health community, at least not right now, is they were able to take clear glass and make it into a high-def monitor. So I would be looking at a piece of glass, a window, for example, that had no, you know, pane. It was a solid pane of glass. And they could flip a switch, and now all of a sudden it was no longer completely transparent. It was an actual high-def TV screen showing a movie.
Okay.
So think about that. You know, you've got a mirror. You've got, you know, the entertainment center has a piece of glass on the front of it. Normally, we would open the glass and get the movies out from behind. Now we can do that, but in front is the actual TV screen.
Right, and you don't have to take up a wall.
Exactly.
You can have a window that is
and when it's turned off,
it's a window.
Everybody sees your movie collection. They had some displays. I'll post one or two on Facebook so that everybody can see. But they had a few things where your living room was a wall of shelves, and there was some glass in there, and you could see everything on the shelves. And then when you sit down to watch your movie, the screen basically was the glass on the that looked like they were the doors to the shelf.
So it looks like the key things are drones, household appliances,
right,
wearables, and some updates of TV that wasn't that impressive.
I think the message is what you'll hear the term Internet of Things. What does Internet of Things mean? IoT. Well, basically what it means is things that work off of electricity and help us are becoming smarter. They're talking to each other, they're sharing data with one another, and they're helping to make better decisions in what we do. Now, I don't know how that's going to help my coffee pot, but apparently it is.
Well, it will tell you.
It will know I don't like the latte foo-foo. Just make my cup of coffee.
See, mine already knows that because
you had to tell it.
It stays on the shelf.
So anyway, until next year, you know, I'll tell you about what goes on next year. But this year was, things are getting really smart, but they're not changing. Nothing has changed the way we do things. It's just everything we do has gotten so much smarter.
Except health matters. And so
speak for yourself there.
Short biggie. This is from the Canadian Medical Association Journal, and kind of a reminder that that there are limits to what we can do. There's a guy named Ian Drennan, a guy who I immediately liked. He's with Paramedic Services in St. Michael's Hospital in Toronto, Canada, published in the Canadian Medical Association Journal, January 18th, and they looked at cardiac arrest survivors. Now, Rick, you know, and we have brought on this show before, if you live in a rural area where there are prolonged response times, your chances of surviving a cardiac arrest go down.
Correct.
So you have to think about that when you move to a rural area. There are lots of good things about living in a rural area, but that's a problem. Well, they looked at 7,800 and change people who had a cardiac arrest in private residences and were treated by first responders, 911 call, and so forth. Less than 4% survived to be discharged from the hospital. So no matter what you see on your favorite emergency medicine TV show, less than 4% of all people who have a cardiac arrest in their home survived to be discharged from the hospital. There are 6,000 of these 7,800 and change people who live below the third floor of their buildings. 4.2% of them survived. If you live above the third floor, 2.6%. If you live above the 16th floor of the building, less than 1%. And if you live above the 25th floor, nobody. Zero, none. There were only 30 patients who had a cardiac arrest at that height, but nobody did. Regardless of the floor, apparently they rarely used one of those automated external defibrillators. These are the life-saving devices. Apparently, no matter where they are or how close they are, most people are going to do CPR and call 911. Average, it took about 6 minutes from the time of the call to arrive at the building, 3 minutes between arriving at the building and first contact if you live on the first or second floor, 5 minutes above the third floor. And again, when you get to the 25th floor, you know, getting an elevator, getting up there, you're doing CPR, you're adding minutes to
right.
The time before the responders come.
So now, would a regular citizen be able to buy an AED, the automated external defibrillator, with justification that I live above the 16th floor?
Well, certainly, if you have
can
the cash,
now, right?
Yeah, you have
really.
The cash.
I would have thought that's a doctor approved device.
No, these
anybody
things are,
can buy it.
Yeah, these are the things you put in at the ballpark, at the nursing home, and so forth.
Yeah, I don't think you can put them in your residence, can you?
All right, so there's the health matters question. I thought you could because you know what we're talking about is something that you strap on some pads, and it shocks your heart to try to get it started again. And these analyze the heart rhythm to make sure that you do need shocking, that you're not just faking it, and then they shock the heart. Rick's busy on his computer right now because he's going to double check me. He did not go to
Google. You're right. You're right. You can buy them for the home.
Okay. And so you could get one of these things. In other words,
heartsmart.com.
There you go. We've even got a website. But the point is, it's kind of interesting. They said, well, look, this is, I mean, you don't buy your home or rent your apartment based on where you want to have a cardiac arrest. Nobody does.
No, but you need to know so that you could properly equip it to help add minutes to your response time.
People who are very sick may want to consider the floor number when they move. Again, says Ian Drennan, the guy that wrote the article. He said, it's the same thing as if you're trying to move out to the country. You think, if I get into trouble, is this the best spot for me? And for me, that was really what it was about. Above the 16th floor, above the 25th floor, certainly, but probably above the 16th floor, the city is just like the country in terms of response times. An interesting thought. You know, I've wondered, especially, I think, since 9/11, about living on the upper floor of a building. You know,
right.
Those fantastic views. What do you give up when you get beyond the reach of a fire truck ladder? What are your options? Should you have a parachute in your apartment if you have a penthouse apartment?
I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, you know, you'd have to believe such a small percentage of the population live above that level. That, you know, I don't know. But you're right. It does pose interesting questions. I mean, now for various reasons. Now there's more than just that reason.
Yep.
Because, you know, me, I'm, you know, a big shorts, ice cream eating, you know, unhealthy, older male. So, you know, I'm doomed, right?
Oh, you got to stay below the third floor.
I mean, now, granted, if I wouldn't take the elevator to my house and I live that far up, I would be in much better shape and might have less risk.
Or we'd find you on the stairwell. Could go either way.
Well, good point.
Last article. We're finished here. January 12th, the creators of the Lumosity. You remember Lumosity?
Right. Make your brain smarter.
The brain training program. They settled an FTC charges alleging they deceive customers with unfounded claims that their games can help reduce.
You know what it is? Their customers
impairment.
Smartened up on them.
They said. This stuff is garbage. And in fact, I mean, there's nothing wrong with stimulating your brain, but they implied that
you couldn't do that naturally.
Prevent age-related cognitive decline, prevent Alzheimer's disease, and so forth. And in fact, no. There, as a part of the settlement, they will pay $2 million, notify subscribers of the FTC action. We wanted our Health Matters Radio fans to be aware. Things like this, there were some studies that were preliminary results and associations. They were poor quality studies. This did not meet the level that the FTC required to actually be documented scientifically. Their letter to their customers pointed out some studies that indicated that perhaps they might be beneficial, but the FTC, in fact, was not buying it, and we recommend that you not buy it either. Meanwhile, we at Health Matters are going to leave the air before the FTC says anything about us.
Special thanks to Morehead State Public Radio producer Hunter Reese and to Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to our show, go to WMKY.org or visit us on Facebook. Just do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. And remember, Health Matters is like Belsomra sleeping pills.
Do not listen to Health Matters if you have narcolepsy. Of course, you might find yourself snoozing to it. When listening to our show, do not drive or operate heavy machinery until you are fully, and I mean fully, awake.
The temporary inability to move while falling asleep or waking up and temporary leg weakness also have been reported. In depressed patients, worsening of depression, including a risk of suicide, may occur. Alcohol may increase these risks.
Walking, eating, driving, or engaging in other activities while asleep, you might have a problem. Without remembering it the next day, have been reported. Health Matters should not be combined with alcohol. Abnormal behaviors may include aggressiveness, confusion, agitation, or hallucinations.
Let's see. Inability to move, suicide, hallucinations.
Aggressiveness.
Boy, you must want that
confusion.
Sleeping pill. Whatever you do, do not take Health Matters lying down. Get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, and tune in next week as we explain how to keep your fuzzy sleep word cat away from your fuzzy wake word dog on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.